Leslie, brought to you by Barfoot & Thompson.
On the show today, our favourite branch manager from Barfoot & Thompson is back to look back on 2025 and look forward on 2026. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. We're getting closer to Christmas if you're listening live here on Planet FM. And if you've downloaded our podcast, thank you. And thank you to all our listeners who contributed to us coming in at number 2 on the FeedSpot Awards out of 100 real estate. There's 100, can you believe that? New Zealand real estate podcasts. And we came in at number 2. Congrats to Property Apprentice at number 1. You deserve it because you do this every single day. We're just weekly. But we really appreciate all our guests that come on the show. And all you fabulous listeners listening live or downloading our podcast from all around the country, which you can do from your favourite podcast site. Now, this guy, I don't know, needs to earn frequent flyer points. I don't know if we can do frequent radio points, but it's so good to have you back, Tony Buckwell, I changed your title there, branch manager of Barfoot & Thompson Teatatu. Welcome back.
Hi, Stephen. Yeah, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure to come in. I love coming and having a chat with you about property matters. So glad to be here.
Well, it's nice because we kind of then get that sort of check-in point of where the dial has moved by having someone come back so often. You know, so tell us, what is 2025 done in the West Auckland market for you? Are you still smiling?
Yeah, of course. Always try and keep a smile on my face.
You didn't arrive in a lime scooter because, you know, it's been a tough year.
No, I can still afford to run a vehicle. I get asked this quite a lot. You know, I think late last year, everyone was expecting 2025 to be quite a significant year of recovery in the housing market. In actual fact, that didn't quite eventuate. I describe it as a year of the bounce. So the first half of the year was still sliding. So prices were still dropping away. Confidence was still low, still a lot of headwinds in the economy.
Yeah.
Halfway through the year, I think we really did start to see some significant recovery. And I'm talking in terms of sales volumes. So although prices haven't started to move up yet, the numbers of transactions have, and we've seen a really, really significant jump in the total numbers of properties transacting. So that's the first indicator that there's a bit more positivity coming back, is just sales volumes. People are actually transacting again, which is great, and it's good to see.
So then get your crystal ball out. What does 2026 look like, do you think? And I guess this, curious on West Auckland in particular.
Yeah. Look, this time, again, there's a lot of predictions of an improved market, and I actually really am on board with that. I think the fundamentals of what could drive an improved market are all there now. They're in place. They're kind of ready to be activated. In terms of who's going to be active next year in terms of buyers, I see a return of developers probably into the mix, and they've been largely missing for a number of years now because the environment hasn't really been suitable to them to buy land, develop it, build homes and sell at profit. But with the return of better buyer demand next year, I think they might come back into the mix. First home buyers have been our most active buyer group for the last couple of years. That nice reduction in price point has made housing affordability a bit more accessible for them, plus the reducing interest rates. I do actually see prices starting to creep up again next year as demand increases. It's inevitable. It's the 101 of supply and demand, you know, that we all learnt at economics at high school. And the other big change I predict might happen is a return of a bit more activity in the auctions scene. Now, the auctions have been, you know, a little bit cool in the last few years. Again, just reflective of the cooler market. So I believe we're going to see a lot more vendor sellers as, you know, the market heats up a little bit, wanting to take their home to auction and see if they can achieve, you know, a premium result there. So those are some of the things I'm predicting for 2026.
Okay. Now, on the show, we've had a few guests talk about the different data in real estate that sort of, you know, makes all these facts come true. Mm. What data do you rely on as a branch manager to kind of help, I guess, look at the past and predict the future, but also give tips and tricks to your team?
Well, one of the big ones, as I mentioned it to you already, is sales volumes.
Yeah.
And so at Barfoot & Thompson Weekly, we get a weekly sales report, and it literally tells us how many properties have we put under contract or have gone under contract with our company in the past 7 days. What we've seen is some stellar numbers coming through there, almost back to the really sort of peak numbers back in that sort of COVID sugar rush that was going on for a while. That is an actual evidence metric, if you like, right in front of me showing there's more buyers in the market, there's more transactions happening. So that's been quite consistent week on week. We've been seeing over 300 sales a week for quite a long time now, including 2 weeks ago we had one that peaked out at a figure that peaked out at 367 sales for 1 week. That's just our company alone. That's, we haven't seen figures like that for years. So there's evidence there that there's confidence coming back into the market. The other indicator is nearly every bank chief economist is saying the market's going to get better next year. Now, these are people that have done, you know, PhDs.
You hope they've got it right,
They're certainly a lot more educated than me. And if they're all consistently across all of the banks saying, look, just every indicator is we're going to see an upturn in the housing market next year, well, yeah, I'm not going to sort of oppose them on that view. And I just think that low interest rate environment that's going to be sitting with us next year is going to be the fuel, the catalyst for a lot of people having more confidence in borrowing money to come back and get back into housing again.
Mm. So what did this all translate to for your team this year, your sales team and your property management team? What sort of year has 2025 been for them?
It's been another fairly challenging year, but in different ways for both sides of the business. So for anyone not that familiar with a real estate office, you know, you've got your sales side of the business and your property management side of the business, and they've both had challenges in a different respects. I think with our property management side, they've had a huge year of regulatory changes, and that's put a lot of additional workload on them. They've had the Healthy Homes deadline that had to be complied with by July 1st, and more recently, a change in the pet bonds, and they've had to manage their way through all of those changes while still doing all of their regular work. So they've also been under a lot of pressure to assist their owners additionally, who have been just finding it really tough being an owner with the increasing costs, you know, things like rates, insurance, compliance. All those cost increases put a lot of additional pressure on our owners, and our property managers deal with our owners all the time. So, you know, just being able to help our owners navigate through these tougher times and these regulation changes, it's been a lot of additional work that's being loaded onto property managers. So that's been their big challenge of 2025. On the sales side, it's been a better year for many salespeople, reflecting in those increased sales numbers that I was talking to you about. So most transactions are still taking a lot more effort by them to get over the line. The negotiation skills have had to be really good. And then even once a contract's in place, salespeople have got to have a really good suite of skills about how to then assist both parties to get to the point of being unconditional, navigating past the finance and the builder's reports and the various inspections and things, and getting a deal to where it now is unconditional and a sale is going to go ahead. So different challenges, but you know, I've got a very resilient team and a very experienced team, so I'm very proud of how they've navigated those sort of challenging waters,
So for property management, you just mentioned, you know, the Healthy Homes deadlines came in earlier this year, now all the pet regulation changes. How did the landlords respond to those changes? Like, have they supported your property managers through this journey, or, you know, are they like, why are you making these changes, Barfoot and Thompson, not realising that it's kind of at the government level?
Really good question. I'd say largely most of our owners, clients have been really good. You know, they've understood that it's not our regulation as a company. It's a piece of legislation that's been passed, for which we have to ensure that they're safe and they're compliant, because if they're not, and after the deadlines, it left owners in a very vulnerable position to quite significant fines. So I would say overall, owners have been very on board. I'm not saying they'd be happy, you know, if they had to invest a bit of money in upgrading insulation or heating or ventilation or draft stopping, whatever it might be. But they've now got to the point where they're a compliant home, and I think most of them have really appreciated having the professional guidance that we've been able to provide to give them the assurance, you are safe, you have got a compliant home. MB isn't going to come to you and slap a big fine on you. So, look, there's a very small percentage, and I don't know what the percentage is, Stephen. We've had owners who either haven't been able to or haven't wanted to, you know, come to the standard.
Right.
Very regrettably, in some situations, we've had to disengage that management because we just, as a professional property management company, cannot be managing properties that are illegal or don't comply with the regulation. But I do believe that's a tiny percentage of the overall,
Have you had lots of pet requests yet? Like, have we got cats, dogs? Yeah, I think so.
But
chipmunks. I don't know why that entered my head, but you don't know what.
Sorry, what was the other animal you mentioned?
I don't know why. But what other, you know, have we had this? Because there was always that concern of, you know, the crazy sort of pet numbers, but it's
I'm not hearing that through my team. I'm not hearing that this change in regulation or law has seen a significant increase in applicants, you know, with pets. I think we always manage the pet applicants anyway, you know, and we just found the right property for them. It's just changed the landscape a little bit.
It gives a bit more protection, I guess, to the owner as well. Do you think it's still a good time to own an investment property? You know, is property still A1 investment?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at property investment just over a very short term, sure, there's always challenging periods, but historically in New Zealand, property ownership's always had long-term benefits. And in terms of if someone was looking to buy an investment property right now, I think there are some unique advantages if they were looking at getting into property investment. Those being like the low interest rates, obviously that's really beneficial for them at the moment. Prices have also fallen to their lowest level in years in Auckland, so there's an affordability there that a few years ago the same property would have been maybe 20% more expensive. If it's a previously rented property and it's been professionally managed, it's already compliant, so they virtually can buy a property ready to rent out, hopefully. If not, just make that one of your conditions of purchase. Look, the only caveat to this whole bit of advice around getting into rental properties would be, if I was talking to someone thinking of getting into investment just at a social event or whatever, be just do your research first. You know, talk to some property managers about where's the rental demand at the moment, what type of property is being sought after by applicants. If you buy the wrong type of property in the wrong area, you might be a while finding a tenant. So we can provide some really, really good guidance in that respect and make sure that people are actually looking at the right types of property they're going to be sought after and have very low vacancy rates and things like that. So, yeah.
And again, it's that talking to the experts, isn't it, and getting that price right, because you don't, you know, for every week it's sitting there because you've slightly overpriced it, that's missing revenue. So trusting your property managers who know their area.
Yeah, and I know that can be a hard thing because people are thinking, oh, but if we could just get another $20 a week, whatever. But then you run the sums and you think, look, for that $20 a week extra that you're trying to obtain, let's say that means that the property's vacant for another 2 or 3 weeks. It literally takes you a couple of years to get that $20 a week back. You are so much better to meet the market, listen to the professional advice that, because we've got all the data to work from. We absolutely do know what the market rent level is for a particular type of property. If an owner will have faith and confidence in us, we'll get a tenant quite quickly if we pitch it at the right level, and that way that minimises that vacancy time and reduces that time where you've not got income to service your mortgage. And
definitely. Alright, imagine I'm one of your sales team now. Inspire me. What are your tips and tricks for your sales team as you head into the new year?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because obviously I'm having discussions with my current team now and sort of trying to get their mindset right for the new year. But that's the first thing I would talk about would be mindset. I think it has been, you know, I don't sugarcoat everything. It's been a quite a difficult last 3 years for a real estate salesperson. But with this very apparent turning of the tide with real estate, I honestly believe next year is going to be a great year. So what I'm saying to my team is go away, have a rest, recharge, but reset. If you've been feeling a little bit negative about the market, about your profession, about your job, you need to leave that behind. What I've found in my years in real estate is that people like to work with professionals who have got a positive mindset.
Mm-hmm.
If you come into a meeting or whatever and you outwardly seem a bit down and a bit negative, don't be surprised if you don't get the signature or you don't get offered to, you know, asked to do the work. So mindset will be key. Coming back with a really positive outlook towards what 2026 might hold. Also, and this is not peculiar to 2026, but, you know, committing to the fundamentals of connecting with their database, of doing their prospecting, of doing their professional networking, all the things that help sustain and grow a real estate business are so, so important. One fear I have got is that for a salesperson or people who have perhaps had a bad couple of years, that they might believe that just a generally improving market is going to solve their business, and it doesn't work like that. The very good agents are successful whether it's a bad, mediocre or great market because they understand the fundamentals of what it takes to be successful. So if someone's been having a bit of a poor time of it in the last couple of years, with their reset needs to be an absolute commitment to getting back to the fundamentals that they know will get their phone ringing and that they know will increase the numbers of properties that they'll get the opportunity to market. So that's really important. I've another thought I've had about next year is, and I'll be I have already talked to my team about this, is retraining in auction management skills. Because auctions have been not so as popular in recent years, a lot of agents who perhaps were running a lot of auctions haven't been. And just like anything, whether it's your gym or, you know, whatever it is, if you're not doing things regularly, you lose your skills. So
so what sort of skills are you talking about in an auction space? If I'm an agent in the auction room, what have you had to sort of teach me to
do? Well, it's more than about in the auction room. When I was in sales, I believe that successfully and running an auction campaign really well started from the moment you listed as the property in auction for sale. There's so much more work to do with your buyers, for example, in the lead up to the auction.
Right.
Believing that running an auction, having an auction room available and there's the property for sale and you've met people at open homes and you invite them and then they arrive on the day and think everything's going to be fine is fundamentally flawed. A lot of people would have never been to an auction before. They don't understand what's going to happen on the day, what the potential scenarios might be. So working really actively, educating and preparing buyers for the auction day and also working with your vendors on that side and helping them have a really good understanding of what might happen, the different scenarios, and educating and working with them. So effectively you have two sides to an auction situation who are ready to do the business, they understand what's going on, they're ready to buy or sell a property. So we've just started a new training program at Barfield & Thompson. It's literally only just started, called the Auction Ascent Program, and that is specifically designed to upskill and tool salespeople with all the skills and knowledge they need to be more successful managing auction campaigns. So that's one of my big bits of advice for 2026. So people have fallen away from that. Upskill, retrain, and get really sharp on your auction skills. And there's one more thing for next year, which I'm talking to my team about, which is plan your breaks. With any busy year, the challenge can be you get immersed in that and just fry yourself, burn yourself out by the end of the year. To be really successful in a high pressure job like real estate sales, it's mandatory. You've got to plan your breaks and plan your rest.
It's that mental health thing too, of knowing something's in the diary. We actually just need to know it's there.
I had a habit when I was selling at the start of the year. I always had my mid-year, my winter break planned. It was booked, whether it was just 10 days, you know, in Rarotonga with my wife or whatever it might be. You must plan it or it won't happen. You must book it or it won't happen, because there'll always be someone that wants you now, needs you now. Well, if they really need you and really want to work with you, they'll wait 10 days. That was always my view. But you've got to schedule those breaks or you won't take them. You'll just get lost in your business and then wonder why you get to October, November and you're limping to the finish line rather than finishing the year strongly, you know.
Yeah. When you look around, not just Barfield & Thompson, but you just look out in the marketplace, you know, thinking of your top tips there, what is it that makes an agent stand out for you? When you're looking, I guess, in social media or, you know, just at auctions and events, where do you look at someone and go, you're above, you know, top of the class sort of thing?
Just as a preamble to that, what I'd say is there is no one way of doing success, you know, operating a real estate business successfully. There's many variations of it. However, over my years watching and observing and working around successful salespeople, there are a few common traits or things that I've noticed. And I heard David Kelly, great manager from the Epsom branch in our Hall of Fame, talking about this very thing, and it was interesting hearing his answers in an interview I was watching where some of the things that he mentioned resonated with me because I'd observed the same things. So my most common attributes that I see in top-performing agents are they all work the hardest. Now, that might sound really simple, but they are dedicated to their businesses. They really, really work hard. They don't see it as part-time. It's not a lifestyle or a casual thing. They are in business, and they really just work hard. They outwork other agents almost. They also treat their real estate work as a business, not as a job. They literally understand that what they're doing is a business. It's not just turning up 9 to 5, doing a job and going home. And all of the things that someone has to do running other businesses in terms of self-marketing,
yep.
you know, all of the behind the scenes that goes on is needed in real estate as well. Because this type of agent does recognise it as business and not just a job, they commit to investing their time in their prospecting, in their databasing, right. in their professional network growth. They are not so tied up in the transactional side of the business that they ignore all this business growth, these fundamental things that, that really top salespeople do. Even when they're busy, they're still doing prospecting and connecting with their database and making sure they're speaking to their past clients. Daily, weekly, they will have a number of calls they'll commit to so that they do not just forget their, you know, the importance of that. And most importantly, I think most top agents are just great at connecting with people, you know, and understanding their needs. I don't think you can actually be good at this job if you can't sit with someone or a family or be in a lounge room and talk with people and understand truly why are they needing to sell their home. Mm. Why are you here? What is it that they need from you to assist them? Yeah, that's a thing I think you've inherently got, or if you don't, you need to do a lot of learning to understand how to do it, yeah.
What about a property manager? What makes them stand out from the rest, stand out in the crowd?
I think a property manager is similar in some ways to a salesperson in that they really are they're there to deliver exceptional service and solve problems. You know, if the challenges and issues could very easily be done by a private landlord, the property managers wouldn't have a job. So they're going to be exceptional listeners, exceptionally good communicators, and really good problem solvers, and just be calm. You know, that's their job. They sort of sit in the middle between tenants and landlords, and the best property managers don't get frazzled and run around the office like a headless chicken every time something goes wrong. They'll calmly hear it, respond in a nice, calm, measured way, even if it seems a bit outlandish what they're being presented with. And then they'll just calmly respond to that and find the appropriate solutions. And, yeah, so that's what a good property manager needs to have.
So if you're thinking of the career side of the business, what sort of jobs might people have currently that transfers well across to, say, sales or property management? Are there certain, you know, things that you look for and say, look, you've survived hospitality, you'll survive property management sort of thing, and what's it like for sales?
Yeah, rather than giving you a list of jobs or careers, I would say there's sort of an attribute or quality that people bring from previous careers that I think really lend to enabling them to be successful in real estate.
Yep.
It's just any business where connecting with people, understanding their needs and delivering solutions and results, you know, those, that type of role would be great in real estate. Now, when you think about it, hospitality often provides that kind of background, that experience. And even when I think back to my previous professional life before coming to real estate, when I made the decision to transition, I really struggled to see how anything I'd done as a professional firefighter for 24 years was gonna be all that helpful to me.
Did they not tell you how many fires you'll be putting out as a manager?
Yeah, well, there is that side of it, in real estate. But then it was kind of like quite a while after I started in the role and things were going well for me that I actually realised, hey, something clicked, like a light bulb came on. The reason I felt like I was settling in well into my new career, into my new profession, was that all those years of professional firefighting where you are literally dealing with people in crisis situations, they've got a major problem that they really need you to come along and provide some solutions for. Well, it wasn't quite obviously that critical life-threatening, critical situation in real estate, but it was just still the empathy, the ability to listen to what people's issues and problems were and provide solutions. That's what I brought with me from my previous career in firefighting. So I think there's tons of careers that could lend a person to being a good real estate property manager or salesperson. It's the attribute, you know, that they bring within, that ability to listen, to empathize, to understand and model a tailored solution to how we can help that person through that situation.
Yeah. Mm. All right. So you've got them on board. What critical factors, what are sort of the key factors, I guess, to success in their first couple of years?
Yeah. The most pivotal time, you know, for a real estate new person is that first couple of years. So if someone was coming to me and they were asking me, you know, what are those factors to success going to be, I'd probably just provide them a few little pointers. One would be, before you start, talk to several managers and business owners to decide what sort of business environment there is going to be in that office if they were to commit themselves to that particular location, and what support will be available for them in those very important early stages. And I'm really talking about in terms of training and professional development and one-on-one support, because in the early years you do need a lot of support and a lot of training. The other thing I would say to someone considering this for that first year or two is just to be crystal clear in their mind that this is a new business venture. It's not a job. It's just such a fundamental difference, but they are starting on a new business venture. So those first 2 years will be all about establishing a sustainable business that will serve them, you know, for a long time into the future if they get their fundamentals right in year one and two. So that's critical to me whenever I'm sitting with someone who's new or considering coming in, that they really, really understand this is a business, and what they will be doing is a business as a sole trader within the business of the branch, which is within the business of the company. And my final thing, and I think this is so, so important, and I don't know if it's talked about enough with a new person looking at coming to real estate sales in particular, is to be financially ready for the for the transition. So moving into a commission-only sales role is really challenging at the start. So have a financial plan in place to navigate those lower income times that, to be honest, every salesperson pretty much experiences in that first 12 to 24 months. I see too many people perhaps exit this profession because they didn't actually prepare themselves for that lower income time, and it's the financial pressure that forces them out. It's not because they don't want to succeed or whatever. It just gets to a breaking point where they fall back to, I just need that regular income of a salary or wage, and that's why they leave, you know.
So I guess it's thinking about their own life circumstances. If you've, you know, just had your first child and you're young, etc., and you're trying to juggle all those, it's probably not the greatest time to add that stress.
Yeah, and my advice is, like, run an income and outgoings, you know, sort of not many people do this, unless they're applying for a mortgage or something, but have a really good appreciation of what your current outgoings are for you, for your family, and for every person I'm talking to, that's different. Because for someone who's perhaps young and still living at home with mum and dad and has got a lot of support there and doesn't have a lot of overheads, they can probably run their life pretty lean. If you're someone who's perhaps got into marriage and has got two young children and got a mortgage, and the partner, whether it be the wife or the husband's, had to stop work to look after the children while they're young, it's a whole different financial picture. And that second sort of candidate needs to really look at how long could we survive as a family if I didn't earn a commission in my first 6 months, or if I only earned half of what I'm earning now in the first year. Long-term things can look great because there is unlimited potential in real estate if you do well.
It's about it's the timing,
first
isn't it?
2 years. It's that just getting through those, that really difficult
time. Is it a career you could come to later in life too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is no age that's right or wrong for real estate. Yeah. I joined myself when I was 44. I've got one of my newest members of my team right now is in his early 20s, and one of my more successful ladies in my office who just retired earlier this year, well, I probably shouldn't share how old she was in case she's listening and doesn't want to be, but she was beyond the legal the normal retirement years to draw a pension or whatever it
might be.
Nicely
covered, Tony. Yeah. Nicely covered. So if we look at your management now as branch manager, what do you think makes a good branch manager? If somebody's, you know, a sales agent anywhere in the country now listening to the show thinking, I want that journey next.
This could be a huge list, to be honest. What makes a good manager? I think there's a few key attributes I stick with in my role, and they are being present for my team, just literally being there. I think sometimes, I shouldn't speak for others. That's probably not really the right thing to say, but, you know, I just think my job is to be there and be there for my team.
Yeah.
If I'm off, you know, 2 of the 5 days a week and I'm not in the branch, not in the business, and I'm always on holiday, I don't know if my team would feel that supported by me. So just being present is the first thing. Being consistent with standards and expectations is critical. If you don't have that, your credibility's out the window very, very quickly. enabling self-sufficiency through training and skills development is a really big one. Otherwise, as a manager and a leader, you're just constantly putting out fires and things. So I'm really trying to, when an opportunity comes up, train and enable someone that the next time that comes up, they'll have the tools and the knowledge to be able to navigate it with less assistance from me. So I think that's a good one. Acknowledging success and achievements, both at an individual and team level. We have a lot of tough times. We really need to celebrate the good ones. Yeah. And also when someone's gone above and beyond or received a particular award or recognition, I really believe in acknowledging that and celebrating them. And the last one is one that I think perhaps some leaders don't do well enough, which is sharing the vision with your team. I'm a big believer in that. If we're going to move forward as a team, they need to know what it is that I'm aspiring for this branch, this team, this business, so they know what role they play within that. I'm a big, big believer in that. Yeah. I don't hold my business plan close to my chest. I let everybody know what we're going
for. But it's also the switch of that. How can you hold someone accountable or pull them up if they don't know what your expectations were in the first place?
True.
You know, they need to know that.
100%.
Just curious, how do you decide how many sales agents to have in your team? Like, how much is too many for the market, not enough to survive?
Yeah.
Is there a magic little tool?
I don't really model my team size on where the market's at. It's more just the quality that I'm looking for in the team. I'm very much a quality over quantity, and I'm very much not a bums on seats model where anyone that comes in showing interest will get given an opportunity. Now, I'm going to have probably two or three discussions, and let's not call them interviews, but definitely some very good one-on-one time with someone before I decide if I think they'll be a good fit for my team and the values that we've got at my particular branch. If anything, at the moment, my challenge has been I would like a bigger team. We've had quite a bit of attrition over the last 3 years, just through the downturn in the market. Several very good salespeople have decided enough's enough. They're going to go off and try some different things. So I'm in a bit of a rebuild phase at the moment. But again, I'm talking with quite a few new people, but I'm really selective about who I offer a position to. I want them to really fit into the very positive culture and value set that we've got at my branch, and I just don't want people coming in that are going to upset the apple cart for that. So
Look, this show this season's focused a bit on leadership, and you've kind of talked about what makes a good manager. It's very similar manager leader, but there is a difference. You know, the manager's very much managing the now, the today, where a leader's got to be far more looking forward. When you think of leadership, what makes a good leader, or is there someone or type of leader that's inspired you in your journey?
Yeah, definitely. But I would say not one person. I think what I've done over my years as a working adult is I've experienced lots of different leaders over those years, and I've picked out the best attributes that have really resonated with me, and I've tried to mould those together and say, look, if those are all the best bits I've liked, if I could include them all together, hopefully that'll make me a reasonable leader and someone that people feel valued and want to follow and be part of. So there's a couple that really stand out in my mind, a particularly excellent senior officer when I was in my fire service career who just had built an incredibly tight team on a watch that I was on in the city central station. So I observed his attributes and his qualities and really just tucked those away into my memory bank. And then I guess my branch manager, when I came to Barford and Thompson and did my years of sales, you know, he was my most direct line report, my leader and manager, and there was so much about him that I liked and respected. So I think I've taken the best bits of quite a few people that I've had the privilege of being led by, and now it's my turn to try and demonstrate those attributes and hopefully lead with purpose and quality for my team now. Yeah.
Nice. All right, we're down to the last 5 minutes, so it's quick fire time. What was your biggest challenge in 2025?
Monitoring staff well-being. I'll just go straight to that. You know, it's just been a really hard year. Again, like I say, all those extra load that the property managers have had with those regulatory changes, another tough year in sales. So for me, it's just trying to stay close with my people and making sure they're okay. And you can't always solve all their problems, but just them knowing that you're acknowledged them and aware of them, I think really helps. And recruitment would be my other big one. You know, it's just hasn't been a super attractive profession to come to, real estate sales, for a while, because all the headlines have been negative and stuff. Those have been my two biggest challenges, but again, I'm both fronts, I feel like we're in for better times.
Okay. Have you set any personal or business goals for 2026 you want to achieve that you can share on here?
Sure. Personally, it's to try and schedule some more health, fitness and mental well-being time. Because again, as a leader and as a manager, it's
what you preach. Yes, you can't tell your team to take leave if they see you there 365 days
a year. No, you're right. Yeah. So, and that is a case of really needing to set that into my weekly schedule. In business, I'm a planner. So I've always got an active business plan with goals that I'm monitoring towards, and yeah, I guess a couple of key goals for my branch will be just to continue our team commitment to delivering exceptional customer service. That's been our big, big driver for the last couple of years, and I can measure that by how our Rate My Agent reviews come in and our Google reviews come in, and they've just been going through the roof in the last 12 months, 18 months. So I know we're on the right track there, so I just want to continue that one and just to keep supporting and developing my team so they can all achieve their individual goals. I think that's two really good aims for me for next year.
That's cool. How do you find time in your busy day to make sure you are future-proofing your team and working them towards the goals and training them and not just putting out the fires? Excuse the pun.
No, that's all right. That is a very real challenge in a busy work setting. So, look, I'm really fortunate that Barford & Thompson's got a fabulous training team. So I don't have to load all that burden of training and upskilling myself. So I make sure I use the team. I get specialist trainers come in and I sort of reserve my one-on-one time for my newer staff who really need me alongside them. Obviously, I'm there for my experienced salespeople and property managers as well, but I fully tap into and utilise our training systems and training team we've got within this company, and I'm very, very appreciative of having that.
Are there particular software or, you know, those sort of online AI tools that you're also finding are helping your team?
Yeah, definitely, and they're great time savers and they make our work time a lot more efficient. Now Barford & Thompson's definitely come on with all of the advent of AI. We've got multiple AI tools that we use now in various parts of our business, and I think they've really helped to save time, make our work time more efficient, and just make us better at what we do. So yeah, we're a pretty modern company. We've pretty much got every software and modern digital tool available to us.
Nice. I was going to talk about sort of wrapping the year, but instead I want to forward jump. If I called you back in a year's time, how would you measure your success of 2026?
It'll be that continuation of the, I just mentioned a few minutes ago, that customer satisfaction side of things. That, to me, is a measure of everything we do. So we've been really fortunate to win the Rate My Agent Suburb Award for our branch for the last 2 years, and I'm really, really, really hopeful we get that again in 2026 and expand into a couple of other suburbs as well. And it's looking quite promising there at the moment, but I don't believe in counting my chickens until they're hatched. So I'll know more in sort of March of next year as to whether or not we've got those recognitions again, and I'd be really happy with if we do.
Brilliant. What does Christmas look like for you? Yourself?
My eldest son will be coming home to spend time with us. He's away full-time in Christchurch studying at University of Canterbury, so it's always brilliant when he comes back to spend time with the family. And then we're hoping just to spend a few days here and there away from Auckland visiting friends and family. My wife doesn't finish work at the hospital, Auckland Hospital, till 31st of December, so we can't really do anything till 1st of January.
You're encouraging your team to take a break?
100%. Yeah. Ask them, everyone will say, if anything, I'm just always encouraging them to take time away. It's a high pressure job. If people can just have a break, it's so good for them. And it can't all be about work.
To wrap the show, do you have a favourite Christmas memory?
Yes, I do. time in Whitianga. My grandparents had a batch down there for years and years. My family, my cousins, Nan and Grandad, everyone would be there, and it'd be those long summer days of playing together and playing at the beach and fishing with the bait catcher off the wharf at Whitianga, and they're still as clear to me today as you know, what I remember them then. So we go back there now, actually. My wife's father has retired into Whitianga, so it's great going back there and revisiting all the old haunts.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Tony, thank you so much for catching up. We've run out of time, which is a good thing.
Goes so fast,
it does. It does. Have a very Merry Christmas.
Same
good
to
luck
you,
to your team for a bit of a break.
Yep.
And we'll look forward to catching up next year and see where things are at.
Love to come back.
Catch you all again next Monday for our final show for the year. We're having a look back at the season. Travel safe on your way home. We'll catch you next week. Property.